This is The Guardian.
The stereotypes around millennials are that we're spoiled, we're entitled, we are extremely sensitive snowflakes, we're broke because we spend all of our money on avocado toast. Lazy, entitled, whiny babies, I think, is the stereotype.
You yourself are a millennial?
I'm an elder millennial, yes. What about you?
By 30 days, a Gen Z.
So you're an elderly Gen Z.
I cling to it.
Good for you. Always go younger.
This is Jill Filipovich. She's written two books.
The most recent one is called OK Boomer, Let's Talk, How My Generation Got Left Behind.
But what really got her interested in this growing generational divide was her own life.
When our parents were our age, their lives looked a lot different than ours. You know, my parents owned a home and had two kids and a golden retriever by the time that they were 40. And my life just looked nothing like that.
And I think this was the expectation for most millennials.
If you do the right things, you will be rewarded.
If they just worked hard enough.
I'll work two jobs and then I'll, you know, whatever, run my Instagram business after work.
Saved a bit more, tried a bit harder.
I'll get up at 6 a.m. to go to the gym before I have my $20 smoothie and then, you know, and then go to my very demanding job.
They could find a way to get ahead.
That's the path.
And their life would look like their parents.
It's a path that worked for a lot of boomers. For a lot of millennials, all of that hard work wasn't making us happy, but also just wasn't putting us in a position to be able to have what felt like it should be the basics, you know, the ability to feel financially secure, to buy a home, which I think has led a lot of us to look around and ask, well, what does my life look like? I think that millennials are a generation that is living through a series of broken promises.
I'm Matilda Bosley, and as you just heard, I'm technically, and I'd like to think spiritually, a Gen Z. But luckily, I'm not alone.
I'm Jane Lee, and I'm an elder millennial.
And we want to sort through all of these broken promises.
Yeah, because young people are living in a time when our economic futures are less about how hard we work and more about how wealthy our parents are.
And the more inequality grows between our generations, the more unequal our society becomes as a whole.
How do you feel you are compared to where your parents were at your age?
Definitely not as good compared to them.
I constantly am thinking about money. It's always at the back of my mind.
Because, like, the job market's quite unstable.
But because these discussions often focus on the here and now, how terrible the housing market is right now, how much student debt we have right now, it's easy to lose sight of how we got here.
It's easy to accept that these struggles are inevitable and that there's no real way out.
It almost feels like some sort of just leech to a system stopping you from saving and kind of moving forwards with your life.
I need a roof over my head. That's normally what I think about before I put food in my mouth.
But if we have any chance at curbing this growing inequality, we have to know what caused it.
In this special full story series from Guardian Australia, we're going to figure out who screwed millennials.
And Gen Z.
Yeah, but that ruined the catchy title, Matilda.
Young people are aware of their generational exceptionalism, right?
This is Dr. Intifar Chowdhury. She studies the way young people are coming to terms with the world they're living in.
So young people are actually aware of it because they're living it.
I've just seen surveys of actual people's bank accounts.
And this is Malcolm Harris. He wrote the book Kids These Days, Human Capital and the Making of Millennials.
The numbers are going down and people are feeling really bad about it.
Millennials are set to become the first generation worse off than their parents.
despite Australians being, on average, the richest people on this planet, I think many young people feel they're being left behind.
As a millennial, how do you feel about the economic future of this generation?
It certainly doesn't look great.
Home ownership is a distant dream.
There's a real break in between cohorts that have homes, that own homes, and cohorts that don't.
We're buying houses later. If we buy houses at all, we're renting for longer.
Young people who do not have rich parents, they find it really difficult because who do you fall back to if you can't pay rent?
So we see a higher cost of living in particularly around housing, particularly around education for sure.
We're the most educated generation
in history by a long shot,
but drowning in debt.
At the same time, you've seen an increase in labor precarity.
We are underpaid
while the most insecure.
There's an increase in the casualization of the labor force.
Either unable to get jobs or taking extremely low paid jobs or moving around from job to job because of layoffs and instability.
And it slowly becomes revealed to be a set of excuses for paying people less, right? And for underpaying a cohort of workers.
All of those things, I think, have conspired to keep millennials actually being extremely financially insecure.
I think there has been a drastic jump between economic inequality. The gap between a Gen X and a Gen Y in their economic security is huge.
That's really different than what our boomer parents were looking at the same age.
But despite the fact young people are definitely worse off, when we started reporting this series, we began looking more closely at young people's experiences.
Youth issues are increasingly becoming more and more diverse. You can't homogenize the group.
And we found that the inequalities that already exist are getting even wider.
If you're a woman, it's far more difficult. If you're a single woman, God bless you, I think the financial stress is far more than if you are a young man.
Intifar says that young people with disabilities and those who identify as Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander tend to be in more insecure jobs that involve greater economic uncertainty.
These problems manifest in sort of disproportionate manners across equity groups.
Intergenerational inequality in Australia is like the biggest fracture points in our society. I mean, it isn't just some dumb kind of clickbait debate about avocado toast and house prices. I mean, this is real.
Lenore Taylor is the editor-in-chief of Guardian Australia.
Personally, I sit on the cusp of baby boomer and Gen X, but I have one millennial child and two Gen Z children, and I can see this. I can see how this works. And I can also see how intergenerational inequality gets entrenched because some parents can help their kids and some parents can't. It is an issue that I think should be at the top of mind for everybody.
In the last 10 years, I have noticed a complete change in the mood of young people. Now they are full of angst.
We also spoke to Yanis Varoufakis.
I used to be an academic economist in Australia for 12 years.
He's the former finance minister of Greece and knows a thing or two about a financial crisis.
I was offered the position of finance minister in the midst of the worst part of the debt crisis, and the rest is history.
He says the financial crisis millennials are living through right now has not only come to dominate their lives.
They constantly worry about the labour market, which is becoming increasingly precarious. They face internships that are a modern form of slavery for many, many years, that is unpaid labour.
But it's really different from the set of challenges our parents faced.
The idea of an 8-hour day during which you are selling your labour to others for a wage, a decent wage, a living wage, and the rest of the time is your own, that's just gone.
Our parents worked hard. Yes, they worked those long days, but usually that meant they would then be able to provide the essentials for themselves and their families.
Many baby boomers do understand this, but I think one thing that many of them don't fully see is a degree to which the world rearranged itself to accommodate them.
Over the years, governments created policies to help them achieve the milestones of adulthood we've all come to know. And if they failed, there was often a safety net there to catch them.
The way that boomers experienced, you know, childhood, teenagehood, early adulthood was in a way that was much more supported than the way that millennials have experienced it, often at the expense of, you know, millennial well-being.
And I think this is why a lot of young people blame older generations. But look, even if they did have things a bit easier, is it really their fault?
You know, it's not like someone sat down at some point and said, I know what I want to do. I want to really screw over my children. Like, nobody did that.
So if not boomers, then who? We'll be right back.
Hey, Jane Lee here. If you're enjoying Who Screwed Millennials, you might want to check out another podcast from Guardian Australia. It's called Full Story. It's our award-winning daily news pod where we speak with Guardian Australia reporters, editors and experts, going beyond the headlines to bring you the latest on everything from politics and environment to economics and health. Follow Full Story wherever you get your podcasts, and I'll see you there.
Who's to blame for what's happened?
Wow, that's a very big question.
I have no idea. I wish I knew.
That's a very difficult question. I don't think there could be one person that's responsible.
When we went out and spoke to young people, they may not have had any clear answers as to who or what has caused this generational divide.
I've got nothing. I've got nothing, sorry.
I can't answer that. Yeah.
Multiple factors. I don't think I can pin down a specific aspect.
But there was a growing feeling that the entire system is rigged against them.
You kind of feel numb and you just keep going. Like, you feel like you don't have any other options kind of thing, so you just keep going.
It's kind of just built against us, really.
I have days where I don't want to get out of bed because it's just like, what's the point?
And sometimes you do just got to go, I'm not going to think about that right now. I'm going to go think about the here and now and not think about the future, because when I do think about the future, I just think, God, I've got no future. There's nothing waiting for me, man.
Are you hopeful that things will get better, or do you think it'll get worse?
I think it's going to get worse.
It gets real depressing real quick.
I'm kind of expecting things to hit a low point before people start going, hey, we have a problem here and we can't really ignore it because no one can buy houses or something.
If we don't fix it, what's going to happen?
You've already seen the results in Australia. The rise of not just precarity, but the apathy, political apathy that precarity leads to.
There is actually a report that maps this feeling.
Called the Scanlon Report, which maps social cohesion over time. Very, very handy.
And last year it found that young people are really not coping.
The latest report said almost half of 18 to 44-year-olds were just getting along financially. And almost half say the things they do in life are worthwhile only a little or only some of the time. I mean, that breaks my heart a little bit, that they would feel like that.
When you start to see those kind of shifts, that's really dangerous for any society.
Trust in government and in institutions is also lower. And I think this impacts on how the younger generations view politics.
I think when people feel as though they've been sold a bill of goods and they start to lose faith in the society to live in their government, in their institutions, I don't think anything good comes of it.
I actually don't buy the view that younger generations are apathetic. I think they're more interested in issues that they consider important. And why wouldn't they be? Like climate change, human rights, Israel, Gaza, refugee politics, LGBTQ issues. There is clear evidence emerging that they're not drifting to the right as much during their lifetimes in the same way that older generations did, which is kind of logical, really. Like if you haven't got wealth and status to conserve, you're less likely to become conservative. This is not, you know, an enormous surprise.
But even though young people aren't totally checked out, even though they do care about the issues that directly impact their lives, there is still a disconnect between the change that young Australians want to see and the economic and political status quo, which so far continues to entrench this growing wealth divide.
That's the rub for older generations, right? The largely conservative-initiated policies that are so powerfully preserving their wealth and their status could really fracture the political system, and they're hurting their kids.
There are many, many more young people who assume they would do better than their parents are, in fact, doing much worse than their parents. We're seeing a real shift in how we talk about economic instability and whose fault it is.
And so we come back to the million-dollar millennial question.
I do think it's really important that young people are looking at, you know, what has been sold to us, right, as the natural order of things and asking, you know, well, why?
Whose fault is it?
Not one person, not one place, not one bogeyman.
What got us here?
Human beings create the systems that we live under, and we should have the ability to choose which systems we live under.
Who caused this seismic shift in wealth?
It was a series of incremental decisions driven by the self-interest at the time of the people making the decisions. But they added up to a really profoundly different quality of life for millennials and younger generation than if we'd thought about it way back when, you'd have hoped for them. And those choices were deliberate choices made usually for ideological reasons.
So in this series, we're looking back through decades of economic and political history and finding those specific choices that eroded the Australian dream of homeownership. We're getting to the bottom of which policies actually created this generation of renters.
Younger generations locked out of the housing market are kind of stuffed every which way.
We'll dive into how the system known as HECS transformed from a modest fee that was supposed to make going to university more attainable for everyone into something else entirely.
Into something that is really an enormous burden on people when they start to sort of emerge into, you know, adult life and creating a family.
And we're investigating why, despite the cost of living skyrocketing, wages are stagnating and young people are stuck in work that is more and more insecure.
Younger generations have every reason to feel that they're carrying an unfair burden. And that has allowed inequality to reach levels which I believe are unacceptable. And that is causing a lot of human pain and misery.
How do we stop it? Like, if we don't want to live in this hellscape, what do we need to do?
It's going to take a real fundamental change in the kind of things our world society values. And I think that's what it comes down to, is we're going to have a global revolution in values.
Not every answer has been the same.
I am a person who thinks that this remains fixable.
Every generation feels that the end times are nigh, and every generation is proven wrong.
I am a little skeptical of this theory that says, like, we've just got to start over because we're not going to restart history. That said, I think we do need some pretty significant radical changes in order to make life tenable, right? And in order to create optimistic futures. I think the good news is that we know what a lot of that looks like because boomers had at least some of it, right?
And one thing most boomers did have is a house.
It wasn't a dream, if you like, that just got created in the 50s and 60s. It was just that from the middle 50s through the 60s, many more people could realise that dream.
What happened?
John Howard had basically created a monster out of Robert Menzies' idea of owning a home.
That's next time on Who Screwed Millennials? This episode was presented by me, Jane Lee.
And me, Matilda Bosley. I also reported it with Miles Herbert, who is the series producer.
Sound design by Joe Koning and mixing by Camilla Hannon.
Additional production by Michelle Macklem. Our executive producer is Miles Martignoni and commissioning editor is Gabrielle Jackson.